I was so hard to please. In the ground, in the ground, in the sky, in the hazy shade of winter. But in the Salvation Army ground, down by the side, it's bound to be a better ride than what you got planned. Carry it up in your hand. In the ground,
wanna take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning. We specialize in rides, and we're definitely getting one this morning. If you've got a story that's up and rivals what you've been hearing tonight, then you just got the numbers, and we want to hear from you. It's Coast to Coast AM, weekend version, and we're only about halfway there. So keep it right where you've got it. This man, an emergency medical worker, really does see dead people. Welcome back, sir.
Hi.
I don't know. Your call hit me so hard, I'll remember this call forever and ever, all the rest of my life, I think.
You know, that's the reaction I get from people when I tell them, and that's why I don't tell a lot of people, because it really kind of freaks them out. And out of all the people I worked with, Art, at the department, there was only two other people that saw these things too, that I know about. And first it kind of freaks you out, and then after a while it's part of the job.
Is it one of those things where you really do actually almost get used to it?
Yeah, you do. In case in point, I was going to tell you about this car accident involving some kids.
Sure.
And we had two that were obviously gone when we got there in the front seat. It was a small car. I think it was a Volkswagen Jetta versus a Dodge van head-on. And there was a girl in the back seat. She was conscious, broken bones. I'm in the back seat working with her. And there was a girl outside banging on the window, yelling and screaming. And I'm looking at her, and it's her. And she kept saying, "My sister, my sister." And I'm like, you know, okay. You know, I just figured maybe she was out of her body, need to go back in her body.
Uh-huh.
She kept saying, "Her sister, sister." Well, she went unconscious, and we transferred her to the hospital. She came conscious again. She kept, you know, yelling for another girl's name. And later I found out this was her twin sister that had died 2 years before in a car accident about 3 or 4 blocks away from where that had happened. So she saw her sister. I saw her sister. And her sister's panicking, wanting us to make sure that we're doing everything we're doing.
No wonder you couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I was confused. And I just figured I was seeing the normal, okay, they're out of their body, they're in their body type, you know, experience, and kind of find out it was her sister that had passed on 2 years prior.
Sir, from seeing all of this so many times, what do you conclude about the nature of life and death?
Oh, I think all the people that mostly I dealt with, I think they actually passed over. I don't know if there's people that are roaming around. You know, listening to your show has really been an eye-opener for me, and I just started listening on XM, so I don't feel like I'm so isolated and I'm a freak.
Well, you're not.
You know, and a lot of people see these things. But most of the people that I dealt with, it was serious trauma. It wasn't people that had died from, like, emphysema.
Something you knew about for a long time.
Yeah, it was. So I think they were prepared. I think it was the sudden shock of trauma, and I think they're just like instantly kicked out of their body. to protect them. I don't know, but I think they know that they somehow they have figured it out, and that's the ones that want to go ahead and pass on. I don't know if they're still lingering around someplace.
These people, once the dialogue with you was done, did the apparition just disappear?
Gone. It's like, they're there 1 second and gone the next. And there were several times where I would see them at a scene. I would see them in our ambulance. Then I would see them at the ER. And not only that, but I would also see other people that would, I have figured out through the years, these were relatives that were coming to take them home.
Really?
They would meet us at the hospital. And these people weren't like the hysterical, grieving, oh my God, what happened? You know, they're the ones, so-and-so's here. Can you tell me where they're at? Or how are they? Are they going to make it? They're very calm, very congenial. They're not the ones, most family members are just wigged out when they hit the hospital.
Well, going back to the first story you told, I mean, there must have come a moment where you and that doctor sat down and talked about the man who had just complained about being worked on for too long.
I sat down with that doctor and that PA on three different occasions because I was just so wigged out over this whole thing. And I just couldn't sleep. I wasn't sure if I needed a psychologist. And they assured me that they saw him also, and this was a very common occurrence for them. Not all health workers see him. Not everybody sees him.
But that doctor did, and
he did,
called,
and that's why he called the code.
Called the code.
Because he knew that this guy wanted to give up.
God, I really appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Take care. There's one for the books for sure. And my guess is that because of that call, we're going to get other health care workers calling. But maybe there really is something to all of this. Maybe there really is something beyond the physical life. Well, the only and best evidence that you're liable to get for that is being told to you this morning. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
What is your first name?
My first name is Debbie.
Debbie. Debbie, you've got a story for us, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Fire away.
Okay. I'm a nurse, and I was working midnights.
Another healthcare worker.
Huh?
I said another healthcare worker.
Oh, yeah. You know, it happens to all of us. And I was making rounds. It was midnight, so I was making rounds. And this gentleman was really very well. He was supposed to go home the next morning.
Uh-huh.
And I walked into his room, and he'd been sleeping all night long, and he appeared to not be breathing. So I put my right hand on his chest just to see if there was any movement there. Mm-hmm. And I looked up at the clock because just by the way he had looked, I figured I was going to have to call a code. Once I put my hand on his chest and I looked up at the clock, I couldn't move. I became like paralyzed. Mike.
You couldn't move.
I could not move. I couldn't move at all. I was struggling to make any kind of sound to call for help. My right hand was on his chest. My left arm, I could not move it from my body. I couldn't move my feet. I tried to turn. I tried to yell for help. I could not move at all. And, you know, all these things are running through my mind like I'm going to get sued, first and foremost.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, hey, someone's going to walk by, see me just standing here, and this man's not breathing.
Yeah, so you were paralyzed, actually.
I was paralyzed. I could not move. I wasn't short of breath, but I couldn't speak. You know, I could not move. And my heart is just panicking and racing, and I'm stuck staring at this wall with my hand on this man's chest. And this went on for, it seemed like an eternity, but it was about 3 to 4 minutes.
You think he was dead?
I believe he was dead, yes. I'm sure he was dead. And then all of a sudden, he shook in his bed, shook very violently, just like, almost like an earthquake had affected that bed. It just shook very violently.
Great.
He sat straight up and grabbed my right hand, the one that was on his chest.
Wonderful.
And he said, Debbie, where was I when you walked in the room? And I said, you were right here in bed.
Yes.
And he said, no, I wasn't. I was over by the window, which is where I started looking. He said, I was over by the window yelling for you, hold on to me, I don't want to go, I'm not ready, hold on to me. You were looking right at me.
Oh,
you held on to me, and you kept me here. And I'm like, okay. And then his roommate heard all the noise from the bed, And Seth said, what are you guys doing over there? And so that's my story.
Well, that's one whale of a story.
Oh, it's awful.
the only time anything like that ever happened to you as a nurse then?
Yes. That, you know, and it's because I don't, you know, I didn't tell anybody for a long time because, you know, it was very weird. It still kind of makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. But, you know, it's kind of weird to be part of somebody else's, I don't know if it's a near death or out of body experience or both, because he was floating above the room and could see me.
I wonder what purpose you really served. What did you do when you had your hand on his chest?
I don't know. He felt I was holding him down, but I don't know.
We're holding him in.
Holding him in.
God. Okay.
He said he was just yelling.
All right, Debbie.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much for the call. There's another healthcare worker for you. Yeah, I'll remember these for a while. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Art?
Yes.
I was calling about the other moment. A lady called in about strange creatures she had seen out in the desert.
Absolutely, yes. She described them in quite some gruesome detail. Apparently, genetic experiments of some sort.
Well, my brother was on the cleanup crew that was charged with picking those up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Your brother was on the cleanup crew. What is it your brother told you?
He told me that there are some very strange and very disgusting genetic mutations that have escaped from research labs all over the U.S. And he said they're just horrifying.
And you know, I don't like this at all. I live out in the desert, as you well know. I don't want to run into anything like that. And hopefully I won't. Was your brother successful? Did they clean up all of this... Or are there still more of them roaming out in the desert?
They had about a 20% success rate in finding all of
them. Wonderful. So that means 80% of them are out there still...
All over the country.
Maybe that accounts for an awful lot of what people have been seeing, these strange creatures that people swear they see, the deformed, weird creatures.
I'm fairly sure they do. The rabbit in particular, with the... head coming out of its neck.
Yeah.
I have seen pictures of those, and I don't know the reason for it, but it's some foul-up is what it is.
Will your brother talk?
Well, right now, he's doing some kind of deal. He's on the job.
He's on the job, but I mean, is he somebody who could be talked into spilling his guts?
Well... He does every so often on some chat rooms, some of my friends.
Chat rooms, huh?
Well,
I'll tell you what. You have a talk with your brother. Tell him I want to talk to him.
All right.
And if he's willing to talk, we'll get him on the air. How's that?
All right.
All right? Thank you very, very much for the call, and take care. So there's something, many somethings out there scurrying about the desert. Great. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Turn your radio off, please, if it's on. Good. What is your first name?
Laura.
Laura. Okay, Laura, you've got a bit of a story for us, huh?
Correct.
Fire away.
All right. Well, it was in the spring of 74. My husband and I and my 3-year-old daughter were coming home from visiting family on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on a, you know, pretty rural road. Outside of Chicago, Illinois. It's Harlem and Route 30. Back then, it was really rural. Not so much anymore. But we were at a stoplight heading north on Harlem. And we were just, you know, we had got the light. We were just waiting to go, and the light turns green. And my husband, you know, steps on the gas, and we're moving forward. And then out of nowhere, just to the left of us, this car is, you know, going through the red light. And I'm looking at the car, and I know we're going to be hit. He was that close. I could see his face, you know, through the windshield, and I could see that he didn't have any passengers through our car door. where my husband was sitting. You could just see it was, and we were going to be hit.
Yeah, there's that instant of knowing just before.
There was this, you know, there was just, you know, he was going to hit us. And I know I turned, because my daughter was very precious, and I just turned towards her and I said, oh God, please let her, you know, don't let her get hurt. And I turned back and everything got very watery again. It was like I was looking through water and the car went through us. I could see his interior. I could see him.
You know, I've heard these kinds of stories before that all of a sudden the vehicle just, instead of hitting, passes through like it wasn't the right time or something for this to happen. And so it doesn't happen. Instead, it passes through. And you say you could see him and his interior as it passed through?
Yes. And the other thing is I felt our front end kind of lift, like from the force of the impending collision.
Yes.
You know, these are things that, you know, 30 years later let you know that, you know, it really did occur because, you know, they were just so unusual. So the next thing I know is I'm looking at his license plate, you know, through the window on the passenger side, and he's still speeding. He didn't hit his brake until after he was, I guess what you'd say, he hit us. And
or should have hit you. In other words, he braked after he passed through you.
Right. He didn't have any reaction to it. You know, he hit it, brakes, and he stopped somewhere down the road, and people came running up to us, other cars, and they're screaming, we saw you get hit, we saw you got hit. And my husband and I, we were just like, you know, we were just like totally freaked out. We were just so stunned. And people, you know, they ran up to us and they're looking and they realize we're not damaged, we're not hit. They realized something was wrong. You know, we weren't, you know, smeared all over the road.
Which you probably should have been. And so not only did you see this happen, but there were other witnesses who saw what should have happened.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Did any of the witnesses describe the crash that didn't happen, or the meshing of the vehicles in the way you described? Did they see it that way, or how did they see it?
Well, I think I can remember two things very distinctly. One was this one man that came up to us, and he was like literally howling, I saw him hit you, I saw him hit you. And then he just gets this really stunned look, like the realization hit him. And he's just like, how, why? You know, he just was like standing back, and other people are standing back. And I think it was like collectively we kind of realized something very strange happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people just were looking at us like we were terribly strange. And at the guy down, you know, he was a bit farther down the road, the one who had should have hit us or did hit us. And he got out of his car, and he just was looking stunned and got in his car and drove off.
What do you think happened?
It's been 30 years, and I haven't thought of it greatly a lot. In fact, only in the last 2 years I've heard it twice, other stories like mine on yours.
I have had other stories like that, yes.
Right. And I was stunned that, you know, I mean, I was just so surprised other people had it. It was like...
Well, what I'm asking you, though, is do you think that some glitch in time happened? Do you think it was something that somehow got twisted out of what was supposed to happen and therefore it didn't? Or do you see what I'm getting at?
I sometimes feel it's an intervention of some sort. I don't know if you want to say a miracle or you know, just...
Well, a person of a religious mindset certainly would say a miracle. I'm sure they would.
But see, I'm not really comfortable with saying just strictly miracle because I'm not that terribly religious. But I do know I've had that watery, seeing watery, looking through water, and other things have occurred. And so I know that this is something that happens to me once in a while. And all I can tell you is that we should have died. We didn't. There were people who saw it. I know my husband and I, we couldn't even drive for a good deal of time. We managed to make it across the intersection because we had stopped literally, you know, in the middle of the intersection. And we pulled over, and I know that we were just both sitting there, he couldn't drive anymore.
No, listen, I understand that. I've had, in my day, a few accidents. And after an accident, you are, for a while, at the very least, you're a very different kind of driver. You've had a shock. And so you drive very differently. But if something like what you just described happened, I could understand you wouldn't drive at all. Thank you very, very much. Got to pause here. Bottom of the hour. Remember, I do have a special line open tonight for those who have made a pact with the devil, and I'm going to try to be a little more diligent in answering that line. So, area code 775-727-1222 for people who have made a pact with the devil. We want to know how it's going. 775-727-1222 if you made a deal with the devil. From the high desert in the nighttime, I'm Art Bell. Of a certain night. This is one of those nights. If you have a story of the caliber you've been hearing tonight, here are the numbers.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. And then there was a crash in the night. All right, let's go back to our Let's Make a Deal line. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM, on a very early Monday morning. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right, sir. What is your first name only?
Charles.
Charles, okay. Doesn't have to be a real one necessarily. Charles, you made a deal with the devil?
I'm sorry?
You made a deal with the devil, Charles?
I did in residence school.
In residence school?
Yes, sir.
You were studying to become a doctor?
Yes, I was.
And what caused you? It's very important, I guess, to understand what would cause a person to make a deal with the devil.
I didn't realize I was going to make a deal. I didn't try. And what was going on is I was in school, trying to get through my grades and having issues, staying up late at night and doing everything I could to study. And before I knew it, something weird just happened. I can't even put it into words. And I feel as though I must have made a deal with the devil.
Your grades improved.
They did.
And this was how long ago now?
About 3 years ago.
Yes. How's it gone since?
Well, it went well for a while. I graduated, but am no longer a doctor.
You're no longer a doctor?
No, I was able to graduate and become a doctor, and then it just kind of led me down a different path, and now I'm actually thinking about going to go study law. In fact, I actually have a fellow that was in residence school with me, who I don't believe had anything like this happen to him. But
do you have any concern at all for when the loan is called, so to speak?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any concern at all for the moment when the loan is called, so to speak?
Not really, no. Not now. I feel as though, actually, I have nothing to worry about.
So you're comfortable with the deal you made, and you feel as though it's going okay, and you don't worry about final payment?
I don't, not now. You know, just being kind of young, I'm 29.
Oh, yes.
Don't really feel as though I made things going. And
well, Charles, the years fly by, buddy.
They sure do.
All right. You have a good night. Made a deal with the devil. Not worried at all, because, he's only 29. Now he's going to be a lawyer. Maybe that's the deal called. Good morning. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi.
Hi there. What's your first name?
Kimberly.
Hi. Kimberly, I think you have a story about... I love stories about holes. You know, we had a big, long Mel's Hole saga here on the program.
I know. And when I was listening last night, and you were asking for stories, and I thought, I wonder if Art would like to hear about my hole. And I thought, well, don't be ridiculous.
Oh, no. I like stories about holes. Believe me, I do. So where, pray tell, is the hole in your life?
Well, I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, up in the northern latitudes. And my ancestry on my father's side goes back to the 1700s. He came from England, a single man. He went to the colonies back then so you could own land and, you know, have a future, especially if you weren't the first son. So he came out. He made his way out to the prairies. And back in the 1700s, it was called Lower Fort Garry. And that's what became later on Winnipeg.
Ah.
And he served at the fort, and he went on many expeditions up into the North Country. And around here at that time, the natives were friendly. Like, it wasn't a lot like a warlike people. They were nomadic, and my grandfather... Great, I don't know how many great times he was, my grandfather met them, and of course you'd hear lots of legends and stories, and he, traveling up further north, he had heard of an opening in the ground where the natives said it was where the earth spirits dwelt, and that they would come out at times, and they would hear things and very, very afraid to, I think at times men that wanted to say that they were brave, or even children, you know, would spend the night there as youngsters. But, so my grandfather, got one of the men to show him this and not going into any other detail, for whatever reason, he decided to stake out some property and that encompassed that area. And he also owned a lot of land which became later Winnipeg. But through our heritage, you know, the land was sold off. And my father's family did spread out across the country, and some are in the States now.
So how did you get to this hole?
It came down through inheritance. My father's we stayed in Manitoba, like myself. My brother ended up going out east. My father was born in Manitoba, so we stayed here. So through inheritance, there was just only about 8 acres left of the land.
So when did you first go to this place?
Well, as a youngster, we had heard a lot of stories, but we weren't allowed... We would go camping, and we were shown where, like, the original homestead was. It was by then, and now it's maybe just see some foundation, and it's very bushy. One thing about Manitoba...
Could you return to this place if you had to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you
easily.
Could. All right.
Because,
All right, go ahead and describe, if you would, the hole we're talking about here.
Okay. I haven't seen it for a few years, but what I remember as a child, when my brother and I would, we were allowed, by the time we were old enough, I mean, when you were young, you were not allowed to go near the thing. Till we were about maybe 13 or 14, then we were supposedly supposed to be smart enough, you know, not to do anything stupid. But I saw it a couple years ago, but it's about probably closer to 30 feet. It's very round.
30-foot round hole.
Yeah, and it's, over the years, the family has just let it get bushy. I don't know if you can see it from the air. I don't know. I mean, that's a fair-sized hole. The walls are, I had said to you on the phone earlier, like a marble, and my daughter was listening, and she said, Mom, you don't know that's marble. And I said, well, yeah, I know, but the only way I could describe it
was... But it was like marble.
Yeah, it was like a creamy color. And for as old, yeah, that, I don't know how
that,
old
that implies very smooth. You're saying it was very smooth?
Smooth. Just like...
This marble-like smoothness all the way around a 30-foot hole. Is there
cream.
Any...
And I remember as a youngster, like, then the grass and the bush had grown right to the edge. And you'd look down and you'd see the cream color as far
as you could see.
Like. And so I remember as a kid thinking, well, you know how you bang on things with rocks and, you know, you try and gouge out stuff. And
yes.
You can't do that with this. In fact, like the rock would like break. And I remember my brother and I would be digging around it, say, well, let's see how thick, if this is a wall or is it like some part of the rock.
That's what a kid would do, yeah.
Yeah, but in Manitoba, you do get rocks aren't like cream colored.
So I understand. So how far back did you go? Did you get?
It was about 2 feet thick. So then we figure out where the edge came to after pulling the dirt and the sod away, and then we started going down on, like, you know what I mean, on the other side, the outside part of the hole?
Yes.
The rim?
Yes.
And, well, as kids, you got tired pretty fast of digging deep. It was like that on both sides, almost like, I guess you'd call like a sewer pipe going down, but it was made out of this.
And you threw things into it like all kids would, right?
Oh, yeah. Like each summer you would go and you'd think, well, what can we take this time? You know, a flashlight, a rope. And one time my brother was thinking, well, you know, tie me to the rope and lower me down.
Huh.
And he's the older one, eh? And I go, are you nuts? Like, no way. Because you hear scary stories as a youth that... Well, I know. I
of the just, poor no. little girl who was lowered into the hole.
He's like, he had, I don't know, 100 feet of rope, and he's going to tie it to the tree. I said, no, you know.
Did you actually throw flashlights in there?
Yes.
Flashlights? And did you hear him bang on the bottom, or?
No.
That
and
deep.
We would get big things, like trunks and trees and just anything we could carry. And
throw them in.
There was a lot of funny things about, plus the stories, but... As I was telling you earlier, that about within maybe 50 yards of the hole, a circumference, it was all bush, but it was quiet. You couldn't hear any birds. You couldn't hear any squirrels.
No nature.
No nature, right. Not even bugs. It was like you crossed this invisible line. And really creepy. And
really cool. Now, already... If you had to go back to this hole today,
yeah,
you could do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a walk-in, okay? You know what you call a walk-in? Like, there's no road. Like, you can get to the edge of the property.
It's a how far walk-in?
Oh, okay, you're 80 acres. You're probably looking an hour walk-in.
Is it an hour walk-in? That's a pretty good walk. Okay, is this something still owned by your family?
Oh, yes. And a funny part is that a lot of the cousins now, they think it's a myth because you let the story go. And you keep it private. Like, and I know a couple of times when I was a youngster finding mutilated animals. Like
near the hole?
Outside the circumference of the quiet leg zone, like rabbits.
Oh, out of the zone where there was no nature. So just far enough.
Just at the edge there, you'd find maybe a rabbit. But the funny thing was, like, it would have its organs placed out. And one night we were really, I guess we were brave, I don't know, or so used to it that we slept near it. And because of the, even the natives said they could hear the earth spirits sing. And I will always remember this, but you could hear, I don't know if it was a humming or just a very, almost you couldn't hear, but you could feel it.
A machine-like noise?
Yeah, like a, maybe mechanical, I don't know, but it you could feel it in your body even, like, vibrating. And my ancestors had always said they'd see lights up in the sky sometimes, like, not ships, I don't know, but they were dots of light. I mean, back then, too, like 100 years ago, you didn't think of things moving around. They just called them lights. You know, lights in space, like, and they just, I never saw those myself, but I have heard the noise. I've seen the dead animals.
I have to ask this. Even a child, what would possess a child to sleep inside the no nature area or near the rim? Sounds like a rim, the way you described it, of this hole in the ground that had, yes, where there'd been mutilated animals. I mean, that would be just too scary. How would you, as a kid, get up enough guts to do that?
A lot of it was I had a lot of cousins, and a lot of it was you did things on a dare. I don't remember lasting the whole night.
I wouldn't even be lasting a half an
hour.
No,
and of course I was the younger sister, and I could do anything my brother could do. I do remember laying awake shaking. You know, like just shivering. But
that
never,
sounds more like it. Yes,
yeah, like never sane I was.
Well, I've been always fascinated by holes, and you have an absolutely fascinating one, and you say you can get to it. If I were to come to you privately, I have your information here, and wish to take a trip to this hole, would that be possible?
Well, I'd have to talk to the family, you know, because it is so private. Something that you might be interested in over the years, very rarely has been passed through down the family, are sometimes you would find things left at the edge. Like,
you would find, I'm sorry, you would find what?
Well, I don't know if you'd call them artifacts or one time. We still have it in the family. It was like a pyramid, and it was like ebony, like solid ebony, smooth. And it was left near the rim, and it wasn't left standing up like a pyramid. It was left on its side. And just strange things, like the pieces of this, little metallic things. And I don't know if people were trying to communicate with us or if it was, I don't know.
Tell you what, you talk to your family. I'll get back in touch with you. All right? You take care. And I don't know what it is. I guess ever since Mel's Hole, they've held a certain fascination for me. And I guess a lot of other people, too, because there's been so much communication about it. But these holes seem to have, well, you heard her, no nature and no living things in a certain radius, mutilated animals outside it, a sort of smooth, marble-like, unnature-like appearance. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What is your first name?
My name is Jeannie.
Jeannie, okay.
Yes. When my son Andrew was 6 years old, on December 25th in 1996, he was on his way to Christmas Mass with his grandmother when a young driver who ran a red light struck the vehicle and deemed Andrew quadriplegic on a ventilator with no movement below his jaw.
Oh, my.
So very similar to the injury that Christopher Reeves had sustained.
Yes.
The paramedic reports that were obtained later stated that when they arrived on the scene a few minutes after the accident, Andrew had no pulse, no blood pressure, and no respiration.
He was dead.
They did, in fact, start CPR, even though they don't know actually what was going to happen. And Life Flight was called. They figure that Andrew was without oxygen for approximately 4 minutes, but he sustained no brain injury whatsoever.
That's not possible.
This is amazing. After he was life-flighted to the trauma center, the docs kept him sedated on a special bed to prevent further spinal cord involvement.
Of course.
The neurosurgeon stated that Andrew had sustained a life-threatening injury just millimeters away from his brainstem. The doctors informed me that the outlook for him was very grim, and if he did live, he would never talk due to the placement of an endotracheal tube.
Right.
And stated that he would never be able to eat and would be confined to a bed and not be able to attend school, and he would be homebound.
That's a pretty grim prognosis.
Very, very, very grim. The firefighters and paramedics were there, though, at the hospital every single day of our 60-day hospital stay till we went to another city to go to rehab. Andrew started calling his visitors his angel. And is also his grade school had a fundraiser for us, and they sold Andrew's Angels cookbooks.
And so what happened with him? I mean, with such a grim prognosis?
Well, several weeks later, we tried to put the story together for Andrew in six-year-old terms. He, at that time, was able to talk, even though he had an endotracheal tube placed, and he argued with me and said, no, Mom, that he did not ride in the helicopter. He rode over it.
Huh.
He said that he could see himself as he looked down, and he said that he saw a light, and he saw God and the angels, and he saw his dad. Well, his dad had died in a car accident when I was 6 weeks pregnant with Andrew. Andrew never saw his dad. I asked him how he knew who his daddy was and who the angels were, and he looked at me and said, Mom, they're wearing name tags. Like that was something that everyone should know. He described God as a very old man with a long beard and long white dress on, and he told me that his daddy told him to come back to Earth because his mommy still needed him. A few hours after the accident, I questioned why the accident had to happen on Christmas Day, and someone told me that Andrew was a Christmas miracle for that he was still with us. Andrew has a very brave spirit, and I feel that that's because that he's seen the other side and he's not scared anymore.
That's what they all say. Sorry for the cliche, but I mean, that is what they all say. You're not afraid of death anymore. All right, we got to hold it there. That's Matthew. And she's saying it's a miracle, right?